Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My heart's in California. I'm alone in Arizona. My heart's in California. I'm alone in Arizona.
From newsounds.org and streaming live on Facebook, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. I'm John Schaefer. John Doe is a musician, author, and actor who's probably still best known as one of the founding fathers of the L.A. punk scene with his groundbreaking band X, but he's also done country and folk music with his other band, The Knitters, and has long maintained a solo career, now numbering 10 studio albums, the last of which is called The Westerner. That came out last year, and John Doe is back here in our Soundcheck studio to play a song or two from it, beginning with this one called Get On Board.
We gotta get on board this train. We gotta get on board this train. You might get to choose where you get on board, but we gotta get on board this train. You can't choose your seat on this train. You can't choose your seat on this train. You can look out the window or stand in the aisle, but we gotta get on board this train. There's no VIP or platinum reserve, 'cause everybody's on board this train. There's a mountain pass and a straightaway. There's a water stop on a rainy day. Some people here coming from miles and miles away. Jump from the bridge at the end of the day. But ready or not, 'cause here it comes. And we gotta get on board this train. Say we gotta get on board.
That is John Doe, live here on Soundcheck with Get On Board. That's from the last album. And John, it's been a while since you were last here in our studio. Great to have you back.
It's always good to be here.
There are so many train songs in American music.
Right.
And the really good ones, when you scratch the surface, they're not really about trains after all.
No.
Is that a response to the current...
No, I wrote it about, it's about probably 2 years old. So all of the current political stuff was, you know, over the horizon. And I actually wrote it about death. And then my sweetheart said, oh, that's so sweet. You wrote a song about life. And it's like, well, yeah, you make up your mind. But it's like, it is. It's like you can, you know, look out the window or you can stand in the aisle. You can be a participant and mm-hmm. see it, or you can just like pretend like you can't see anything. And I had to take a little swipe at all the access through money, you know,
right.
like you go to an
platinum
airport
level
and we're boarding our platinum diamond ruby class. And it's like, what in the hell is the platinum ruby? And that, you know, it kind of is a thorn in my side, you know. I mean, sure, I like to go backstage and at a festival
mm-hmm.
if I know somebody, that's nice, you
right.
know. But at the same time, it's infuriating to see that, like, oh, you pay money and you get more. And it's like, oh, okay, on everything, you know.
Right.
So I took a swipe at that. And it was, you know, one of those things. I was really lucky to wake up one morning and kind of hear this thing. And it was one of those songs that kind of wrote itself, but I had to figure out how to play it. I didn't have that this lick, this. It was just more.
Right, right.
And that was dull. And then I thought, well, this is terrible. It's got the right idea, but what do I do with it? And then on the record, you know, working with Hal Gelb, he's a genius. And if it wasn't for him, Calexico wouldn't sound the way they do, and Nico Case wouldn't sound the way she does.
That whole kind of psychedelic southwestern folk
Tucson
sound. Yeah.
And I, you know, I wrote a lot of the songs on that record about my friend Michael Blake, who wrote Dances with Wolves, and he lived out there. And he was, you know, declining through dementia and stuff like that. And so I wanted to kind of honor him and a few of the other songs on the record, Alone in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Xene wrote before that. She wrote that whole song, and I loved it so much I wanted to put it on the record, but it applied to Michael. And
so Xene wrote that for Michael Blake?
Well, not really, but after I did it and after he was declining and all that, it was like, okay, now it is about him.
Oh, I see. Okay. And of course, that's Xene Cervenka, co-founder of the band X with you.
Exactly. My lifetime partner.
Right.
And the three of us were great friends, and Michael lived out there, and Hal and I had become friends, and all these songs seemed to be pushing towards that reverb and space. And there's something about the desert and Tucson or Joshua Tree or any of those places out there that it just encourages you to leave more space in whatever you're working on, whether it's, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe or whatever art. It's just there's the space. And
right.
So leave the space, which is always a good thing. Then other things, then what's in there gets to live a little bit bigger and sound a little bit nicer.
Well, and when you leave space, you know, they say nature abhors a vacuum. We, as the viewer or listener or whatever, we go in there and we fill it with something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We decide whether this song is about this guy or that guy or someone else entirely, and whether this song is really about a train or about something else, you know?
Yeah.
Was it weird releasing a Best of John Doe collection and then sitting down to do another album?
A little bit. I mean, I had a feeling that I was going to leave Yep Rock, which I did, and I put this one out through another company, 30 Tigers. It's a little more self-released.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, it would be nice to document the stuff that I did on Yep Rock and before. But I was already working on stuff for The Westerner when that Best Of came out. It can't be a greatest hits because there's no real, like, bona fide hits. So that's a relief. It was kind of songs that were like, oh, you know, this was a really good song. And I think, you know, maybe it got overlooked or whatever. And but Yep Rock's a great company. I do like them.
Yeah. Well, now, this is going to sound strange because you've been living in California for so long, but now you really are, it seems to me, a Westerner because you've moved to Texas.
Yeah.
Which somehow seems more Western than California.
So. Well, yeah. I mean, I live in Austin, so that's arguably maybe not in Texas as some people think of it, but it's a great place because there are all the free thinkers and weirdos. It's sad, though. I mean, tech is everywhere. We saw somebody that had a shirt, because there's a saying, keep Austin weird.
Right.
Right, just like keep Portland weird, you know.
Right.
And someone had a T-shirt that said, keep Amazon weird. And I was like, I would have take that guy out of the parking lot and beat the living hell out of him.
Or whoever came up with that shirt. Yeah. Probably someone at Amazon.
Yeah. But I mean, I lived in California for 40 years, and it was a little hard leaving. And Austin was hotter than blazes from June to September, but I tour, and it's easy living. You can get around, you know. You can call somebody who lives in South Austin. We live up north and say, hey, you want to meet downtown? Okay, see you in 10 minutes.
Right.
And that's great. That's really good.
So you're living in this city surrounded on all sides by Texas.
I tell you what, though, the little towns, you know, whether it's like 5,000 or 1,000 people, they're still kind of intact.
Yeah.
There may be a Lowe's and a Walmart and junk like that out on the highway, but there's still a hardware store and there's still like a coffee shop and I'm kind of encouraged by that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've lived, you know, L.A., Bay Area, even before that here in New York City for a number of years.
Baltimore. I just visited up here a lot.
I know you were kind of around the first punk scene in the mid-70s, I guess. So that was more as a visitor than as a visitor/observer.
Yes, I was. I was an observer. I also lived in Bakersfield. I lived in, you know, so that's the Central Valley of California. And that's about as redneck as it comes, you know.
Right.
It's all oil, and I don't mind that. I mean, I think that that's one of the things that's, you know.
Well.
So this is a deeper discussion, but it's like, you know, getting used to people that don't share all your values, you know, and respecting them and all that kind of stuff. I think that's been a long time coming.
Yeah. Well, we're all on that train together.
Yeah.
You know? So you mentioned your friend Michael Blake, who wrote Dances with Wolves, among many other things.
Yeah.
Another friend of yours who recently passed away, Harry Dean Stanton, the actor.
Yes.
He's sort of involved in this next song you're going to do for us.
Yeah. Actually, Harry Dean was more of an acquaintance. We had a period where we worked on a movie called Slam Dance, which I just saw recently. And it's terrible. It's so bad. Oh, my gosh. It's just trying to do too many things. It's sort of film noir, but it's sort of kitschy. And Adam Ant is in it. And Harry Dean and I were playing cops, and which was really great. And
what is Adam Ant in this? What does he play?
He's Tom Hulse's manager. Tom Hulse plays a cartoonist. And so Harry Dean and I got to hang out a lot, quite a bit, because we were just bit players, and he told me that he loved music, and he loved playing music, and he learned all these like Mexican folk songs, and I had been playing this guitar shop in L.A. called McCabe's a number of times, and I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to have Harry Dean come down and sing a few songs? So he said, sure, let's do it, and come over, and we'll rehearse. And so I go over on a Thursday, and we rehearsed for like 4 hours, doing four songs.
Mm.
And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is so much rehearsal. Okay, cool. The gig is like 6 weeks away, right? And he goes, how about next Tuesday? And it's like, sure. You know, and it's like, we're rehearsing Tonight the Bottle Let Me Down and you know, or Swingin' Doors, you know, Merle Haggard songs or a Bob Dylan. It's like, okay. But I'm getting to hang out with Harry Dean, so
right,
that's cool.
Right. And he's taking it super seriously.
Oh, so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then we did it, and then I left to do some more touring, and I find out that he's starting a regular show at the Mint, and he played and played and played, you know. So I guess he was just waiting for someone to invite him up to work on it. And when he passed away, I thought, you know, I'm going to relearn this song, and it was really quick. I remembered most of it.
No 4 hour rehearsals
because,
needed.
No, because I had done it like 150 times with Harry Dean.
Yeah,
and
It's a Canción Mixteca.
Yes, and I looked up on Wikipedia, and it said that so-and-so wrote it. He wrote the melody and music in 1912, and he wrote the lyrics in 1915.
Hmm.
And I thought, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think I've worked on a song for three years.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll do it as this is for Harry Dean.
Del suelo donde he nacido, inmensa nostalgia invade mi pensamiento. Volverme tan solo y triste, coloja el viento. Quisiera llorar, quisiera morir. Sentimiento, tierra del sol, suspiro por verte. Ahora que lejos, yo vivo sin luz, sin amor. Verme tan solo y triste, coloja el viento. Quisiera llorar, quisiera morir de sentimiento. Verme tan solo y triste, color al viento. Quisiera llorar, quisiera morir de sentimiento. Oh, tierra del sol, suspiro por verte. Ahora que lejos, yo vivo sin luz, sin amor. Volverme tan solo es triste. Coloja al viento. Quisiera llorar, quisiera morir de sentimiento.
That is John Doe live here in our soundcheck studio in an old Mexican waltz called Canción Mixteca. Did Harry Dean Stanton do that in Paris, Texas?
It was. Yeah. That was the one that Ry Cooter and a beautiful version of.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Which, I mean, I've always loved the score to that film.
Yes. That kind of changed film score music, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. And also Harry Dean Stanton's career, because that was his, like, shot at a kind of a lead man role. And... And I guess did a lot for Wim Wenders' career, too. So that movie,
it was a big deal.
Yeah, it really was.
And Lucky, his last movie, is kind of an homage to that character. It's like what might have happened to that character.
Mm.
That's a good little movie, Lucky. It's kind of sad. It's kind of sad because you could see Harry Dean kind of struggling. But it's beautiful. You know?
John Doe is with us here in the Soundcheck studio playing solo. When you play solo, acoustic, unaccompanied, what kind of repertoire? It's not just from the 10 solo records, right?
No, I play covers and X songs, and more or less what I do with a band, but I can do more requests, ask for requests. And if it's something that I got probably 80% of, I'll just dive off and try to pull out the other 20, and that's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to get halfway through something and then just go, that's all I got. It's all right.
Well, it's even your solo records have always been so collaborative, great vocal guests and instrumental guests. The last record had Deborah Harry of Blondie.
I know.
Sean Marshall from Cat Power.
Yeah.
Is it weird to have this kind of reputation as the touring troubadour, just the guy with the guitar slung over his shoulder?
I think of other people as that. Maybe I am that. Huh. I think of Peter Case as that.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Case is definitely that. Or Tim Easton is definitely that. Jill Sobule is definitely that. But I'm just really fortunate that I can figure out a song that Sean Marshall or Debbie Harry or actually Cindy Wasserman, who sang on this last record. And it's my gal and I were having a conversation the other day, and like she said, so what were you put on earth for? Which is like a heavy duty thing, right? And I could answer it. I'm put on earth to make people feel a little bit better or a little bit cooler. Or, if they go to see an X show or come to a John Doe show, they're going to feel something and they're going to walk out of there having been somewhere.
Right.
And I, when I was able to answer that, I thought, that's a good gig.
Yeah.
It's a really good gig to make people feel a little cooler or a little better or whatever, or to feel.
Right.
And if someone said, that song made me cry, then it's like, oh, you are so sweet to... to have said that.
Yeah. Well, now you mentioned X, and of course, it's 40 years now, right? Something like that.
Ay.
And you guys are still out there, still doing it?
Yeah, we did probably 100 shows this year. We did all of May, all of September, a bunch of in-between shows. And we did a Kickstarter to put out a live show, a bunch of live shows we did with Pearl Jam down in South America. And actually, Exene and I did some touring with Blondie and Garbage. It was just the two of us, Exene and I. We referred to ourselves as the maid and chauffeur of the of the tour, and we actually kind of dressed up like that, all black and white, you know, black suit, white shirt, etc. And Shirley Manson, who's a sweetheart, and Exene and I talked about writing something, and then we did.
We
were kind of working on a song, Murder Ballad, and I saw Shirley about a couple weeks ago. And I said, whatever happened to that murder battle we said we're going to write? I guess that just went by the wayside, huh? And she goes, oh, no, I've got the lyrics. I'll send them to you.
Ah.
And then I kind of worked out some music, so we're going to try to record that in February.
And will that be kind of a standalone thing, or will it be with Shirley's band Garbage, or with
probably
you
more with Garbage than with us. But I have a feeling that X might still make some new music, because we just feel like, you know, really close to each other with all this touring. And you know, we have this museum exhibit at the Grammy Museum in L.A., and that's going to be up into April.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of took the place of where the Ramones exhibit was, and we felt pretty proud of that.
Sure.
You know, because the Ramones are the OG punk rockers. Yeah, so we just feel like, okay, what are we going to do? We get just like, hey, we're 41 years old. Come on and see us, you know.
Right.
We gotta do something.
Yeah, I saw that Ramones exhibit when it was here in Queens, actually,
the
Queens Museum, and it was fun. So what all is in your exhibit?
We have instruments. We got the original bass that I wrote all the songs on. I actually found the notebook like that I would put in my back pocket, where I wrote out the first lyrics to Los Angeles.
Album Los Angeles.
No, the song.
The song Los Angeles.
Yeah. And it's all like sweat stained, and it's as if I was like drinking whiskey and writing the lyrics. I still have the typewriter that we typed a lot of the songs on. Exene has her wedding dress and some other stage stuff, and she got, of course, all of her journals and collage notebook things. DJ had a bunch of his drums, and Billy has some of his old clothes and other photographs of him as a teenager playing in bands and stuff.
So while you guys were starting, were you aware that you might have been onto something that had some enduring power to it? And did you keep stuff thinking someday they might want to see this?
I think we kept stuff just because it had value to us. Because everybody has this revisionist history. It's like, oh yeah, we had a, you know, we knew.
Yeah.
We didn't have a freaking clue. Somebody asked me, so what was your strategy? And I was like, there was no strategy. There was none. There was no like master plan. There was nothing. It's like, I liked Billy and I loved the way he played. Mm-hmm. And I loved Exene, and she had lead singer written all over her to me. And DJ was a really interesting and musical drummer. And then we all got together and it worked. And so it was like, we didn't know that we were going to bring like rockabilly music into punk rock. It was just like, that was what Billy knew. And like, oh, wait a minute, this kind of fits and cool. And yeah, so I think it was more just, it was valuable and sentimental. You know, maybe, you
right,
know, a little
right.
nostalgia about it.
John Doe here with me in the Soundcheck studio. You want to get back to a song from The Westerner?
I could, you know, since we were talking about Debbie Harry, why don't I try this? I don't think it'll mess you up any. I'll try the Go Baby Go song.
You don't know how easily I get messed up. go ahead.
So this, I kind of reimagined this, and Debbie Harry sang on this. She's the coolest. What a, you know, wonderful thing to spend your afternoon hanging out with Debbie Harry. And it kind of took her a minute to get the harmony on this. And then when she was done in recording it, she said, why don't I double that? And I said, yeah, right. That's
the Blondie
signature
sound. Yeah.
Debbie Harry sound, which their last record was so good, that Pollinator.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
And she doubled it in like one take. It was as if she had been mapping the whole thing as she was getting it, and it was like, boom.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, right. You've been doing this a while. You're a professional. So anyway, this is called Go Baby Go.
You're a hummingbird, you breathe so fast. Your lungs are full, your lips are glass. Your wings so thin, work so hard. As I kneel down in our backyard, your eyes are green, my hands are cold. The falling down is starts to snow. We laugh like it was years ago. You take my arm, it starts to snow. We never knew which way to go, so we buckled up and let it roll. Go, baby, go, let it roll. Go, baby, go, let it roll.
John Doe, solo, here in the Soundcheck studio. No Deborah Harry available for that version of Go Baby Go. But this sort of gets to what I was asking you about earlier. You know, all of your records are full of these amazing guests, and very often a lot of the best songs are duos, you know? Mm. You've always been drawn to that male-female thing, going back to Xene and X. So when you write a song like Golden State, you have to be able to sing that. I mean, that's like one of your great songs.
Mm.
So what do? You have to like recast the whole song as a solo, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I just change a couple he's and she's to you and I, and yeah, it works.
It works.
It works.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I continue to do that, having collaborators, or is to hear both sides of the story. Because you're like hearing it from the first narrator and then the other person who's involved, maybe.
Right.
It's always organic. I mean, the reason that I asked Debbie Harry is because we had toured with them, X had. And then Sean Marshall, I had just run into at a friend's recording studio. I went there to just get something. And there's Dave Way, who I have worked with a lot, and he was doing something. Sean was doing something for Jacob Dylan's record, and I just went by to say hi to Dave, and it's like, oh, what a bonus. There's Sean Marshall, and we hung out for a little bit, and she was really sweet. And then the song that I asked her to sing on was really similar to that record, The Greatest, which was one of my favorites ever. That's a beautiful, beautiful record. And yeah,
right.
It all just kind of happens.
Well, and even your, I'll use the word your in quotes, your memoir about the LA punk scene is a collaboration, you know?
Yeah.
With chapters written by Henry Rollins and Xene and, you know,
Jane
Mike
Weedland.
Watt. Yeah.
Well, that was a little bit of Tom Sawyer there, because
painting the fence.
Yeah, because you know, few people would say you should write a book, and it just sounded like so much work. And I thought, oh God, really? I have to do that too. But then I realized, oh no, I get to do it. And then thought that the whole LA scene, as I'm sure the New York scene was based on kind of community and collaborating with people. And I could tell my story, but Jane Wiedlin could really tell her story about where she lived. And where people lived was kind of where we exchanged all our ideas, you know, our salons.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was no Ernest Hemingway. There was no...
there was no Chopin at the piano.
Yeah, there was no Alice B. Toklas.
Right.
But it was where we, you know, said, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And so Jane lived at this apartment complex called the Canterbury Apartments, and there were all these other punk rockers that lived there. And she had a, you know, bird's eye view and a woman's view of that.
Mm-hmm.
I could appreciate the East L.A. impact. So we got Teresa from The Brat to write about someone who came from East L.A. coming into the punk rock scene, and Dave Alvin writing about the Roots scene coming in, getting pulled into punk rock. And so got a lot of perspectives, and it did really well.
Yeah.
We're going to do a part two. More Fun in the New World.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, from 82 to 87. It's like how, what seeds were planted. You know, we're going to try to get some other people from different disciplines, like maybe Tim Robbins said he might write something, and Shepard Fairey said he might write a chapter. And then we'll also have maybe Maria McKee from Lone Justice. And people may not know who Maria McKee is, but without her, the Americana, you know, and Nico Case or you know, people like that would have had a harder time. You know, they were inspired by her. And yeah.
All right. So for the moment, Big Black Sun is volume one then.
Yes.
A Personal History of L.A. Punk is the subtitle, and personal in the sense of a community of persons giving their take.
Yeah.
It made for really fun reading, and
I
haven't seen you since the book came out, so job well done.
Thank you. It's it was rewarding because it gave L.A. a little more gravity, and it also set the tone and some of the story straight, and I didn't want to do a oral history,
Chapters. Well, that's been done, you know, as you know.
But you know, oral histories are tricky because, I mean, even though it's fun, there's not a whole lot of fact checking because you know, I call you up and say, hey, remember that time at the old studio, and you just like go off, and half the facts could be wrong.
Yeah.
And then you can't have an addendum that says, oh, by the way, John Schaefer was high that day.
You'd have a lot of those addenda. No.
Yeah. But the advantage of a chapter format is that you got a flavor of Los Angeles at the time.
Yeah.
Which was pretty wide open, you know, and cheap to live. And so, and we had cars and, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
In a cool way.
Now you're in Austin, so that's cool in another way.
Yeah. I hear there's a lot of music that goes on down there.
Yeah. I'm not sure. But you want to get out of Dodge in March.
You know, I'm just going to hunker down.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to a little less work next year.
Yeah.
I'm going to do some writing and, you know, figure some stuff out.
Right.
So.
But you don't want to be in Austin during South By, do you?
Oh, I have been. You know. Yeah. We actually moved there during South By.
Oh, my goodness.
It was very bizarre.
Yeah.
We had a van load of junk, you know, like the final pack, you know, and I have, of course, a rock van. And we're like rolling into town with a van full of junk. It's like, oh, this is the same damn thing as we always do. Except we stayed.
All right. Well, John, great to have you back with us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. You're welcome. Thanks for asking.
This is Soundcheck. That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check us out at newsounds.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.